Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Sam Monson is one of our favorites from Pro Football Focus. You can follow him on Twitter at @PFF_Sam. He is their lead NFL analyst and one of the early, very early people at PFF. And he joins us right now, and we called you to have you on the show because Sam put together a list and graded all 32 NFL teams their offseason, which, you know, includes the free agency grade, the draft grade, and then an overall off-season grade. And he wasn't necessarily kind to our Washington Commanders, which we'll get to in a moment, but I did want to start off with who you believe had the best overall off-season combining free agency and draft.
Yeah, I think there's a few really good off-seasons in there. I think the Cincinnati Bengals had a great off-season. I think the Jets, the Eagles had really good ones. But it's impressive how quickly the Bengals have gone from a team that you look at it and you say, well, they're overachieving. This isn't a great roster. They're going to come back down to earth at some point. To you look at it now and you're like, that's a very good team that doesn't have an awful lot of holes, and they have Joe Burrow and, you know, all the reasons that they were winning last year as well. So I think the Bengals may have had the best offseason.
In the NFC East, you gave Philadelphia high marks. Why?
Largely, you look at what they did with the A.J. Brown trade, I think is a phenomenal move for them. A.J. Brown is one of the top, you know, pick a number, five wide receivers in the NFL, something like that. The Eagles were still without that number one guy. They've been drafting high round receivers for a number of years now. Devontae Smith looks like he might work out, but the question mark with Smith is still, can he be that number one X receiver, the guy that can defeat press coverage on the outside, you know, stand up to NFL physicality? Now he doesn't have to be that guy. Now he can just be Devontae Smith, and A.J. Brown can come over and be that guy. And then you look at what they added in the draft with, you know, Jordan Davis, I think is a really interesting pick to add a guy with insane kind of upside and talent, a bit of projection involved in him given his college career and the kind of player that he is. And then N'Kobe Dean in the third round, I think, has the chance to be one of the steals of the entire draft given the player that he was in college and, you know, the potential reasons that he slipped in the NFL. I just think generally Philadelphia have added an awful lot of talent in really important sort of weaknesses to that team.
Yeah, I think, and you wrote about this and I've mentioned it before, I think maybe an under or overlooked acquisition was Hassan Reddick. He is an explosive rusher. And if you get healthy like Brandon Graham, et cetera, back, I think that defense has a chance to be really good. So we'll get back to the offseason grades, but I want to stick with Philly for a moment because they're in the division. It all comes down to Jalen Hurts, because that's a pretty good roster, don't you think?
Yeah, it is. They've moved that in the right direction. I think they've done a good job building around Jalen Hurts, and they've continued to kind of stockpile future assets so that they're not tied to him. You know, if Jalen Hurts doesn't take a step forward this year, they have the ammunition to make a move in next year's draft, which presumably will be better at the quarterback position. They can try and address him then. So I think they've done a really good job of kind of hedging with building around Jalen Hurts, but not being completely tied to him if he doesn't develop.
So what do you think of Hurts in the Eagles going into 2022? Do you think that they've got a chance to win the NFC East?
Yeah, I think they do. Jalen Hurts has, it depends on your perspective with Jalen Hurts. It's kind of all about what you thought of him when he came out of the draft. I didn't love him at draft time, so he's overachieved relative to what I thought he would be. He's exceeded my expectations. But there are people out there that really love Jalen Hurts at draft time, and for those guys, he's been a little bit of a disappointment. So I think that kind of tells you where he is, which is he's an average passer right now who brings an awful lot of extra value because of his rushing threat. And you know, he was a top 10 quarterback in terms of EPA per play, or the Eagles rather were top 10 offense in EPA per play because of that rushing threat, the 10 touchdowns, the 800 yards that Jalen Hurts adds on the ground. Now you've got an A.J. Brown to add to the mix in terms of receiving, so there really aren't excuses anymore. It's a good offensive line. It's a good receiving core. He brings that rushing threat to help himself. Now he just needs to take that next step as a passer.
We're talking to Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus. He graded every NFL team's offseason, and he gave Philadelphia the best marks in the NFC East and one of the best marks overall with an offseason grade of A-. Now let's get to Washington. Tell everybody what your grade was and how you got to it and why.
Yeah, Washington didn't have a good grade. They had a C- overall. A big part of that was the Carson Wentz deal. We talked about this a little bit on our podcast yesterday, that this smacked of desperation. Austin Gale had a theory that it was all to do with, you know, trying to maximize the branding, the new Commanders branding. I think it was just a knee-jerk reaction to the process from a year ago going bad and saying, look, we can't have that happen again. I actually liked what they did last offseason. I think that it was good process to say, this is a good team. We don't really have a great shot at a giant jump forward in quarterback. So let's grab a guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick, try and get league average quarterback play. And if that pans out, we're a playoff team and we can, you know, scare some teams because everything else is good around us. Obviously the Fitzpatrick thing didn't last more than a few snaps. Heinicke wasn't able to play at the kind of level we thought he might have in him, given the flashes we'd seen in the playoff game and those kinds of things. And then the defense just caught the bad end of variance, right? We saw what happens when you go from facing a bunch of bad quarterbacks to facing a bunch of good quarterbacks with pretty much the same personnel. You don't get the same results. But I think the process for Washington was sound, only because it went so bad, they've basically come into this offseason and said, we have to do something different. It almost doesn't matter what. And they were the team that was desperate enough to give Indianapolis a way out of that deal that they were looking for after just 12 months.
Yes, yeah, so your off-season grade for Washington was a C-, and you've told us that a lot of that has to do with the desperate, we've referred to it as a panicked, you know, move to trade for Carson Wentz after they made a big offer to Seattle for Russell Wilson, and it didn't work out. I think there's some of us, notably, that would agree with you. I think Brendan would agree with you as well. But you also, I'm curious as to what you thought of their draft, because one of the things I don't think you focused on in your write-up, but maybe you believe, is just how they drafted more for now than in the future. So speak to your thoughts on their just completed draft.
Yeah, I think they drafted for need, and I think that tends to cause reaches. When you draft for need, you focus more on, well, which player is here that fits the need that we have, rather than which is just the best player, which is the highest player on the board. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about the draft and what's a good draft, what's a bad draft, and what can we fairly evaluate immediately after the fact. And it's interesting. There isn't a ton of evidence that says that guys that slide in the draft. So everyone is using this sort of consensus draft board right now. Arif Hasan from The Athletic puts this together. It's got 80-something collective draft boards from various people, and you end up with a pretty solid composite of player rankings, and PFS is in there as well. Obviously, PFF, we have our own draft board, but when you use that consensus draft board and you start comparing where teams drafted players relative to that board, it's pretty instructive. And there's not really evidence that says that teams that wait on a guy and get a guy, you know, way lower than their position on the consensus board, that doesn't tend to produce great value. The logic being that, look, 31, 32 teams are passing on this guy. The chances are they know something that the consensus board doesn't, right? Medicals, character, whatever it is, something behind the scenes that doesn't necessarily show up on tape. But there is evidence to say that if you're going the other way, if you're reaching on players consistently and you're overdrafting players relative to that consensus board, you're getting bad value, because that's essentially a sample size of one, right? That's saying we as an individual team know better than not just the other 31 teams, but the consensus board as well, the 80 odd evaluators on that. And we think that our opinion is better, and that the data simply says that isn't true. So when you look at Washington's draft, almost everybody on it was fairly significantly overdrafted. Jahan Dotson was number 56 on PFF's big board, and they obviously drafted him at 16. Fidarian Mathis, 94 to 47. Brian Robinson Jr., 146 to 98. So we're talking about some pretty significant reaches pretty much every single pick just to fill need. And, you know, they may work out, but the data says that that is bad process, and more often than not, they don't.
Who had, in your grading, a worse off season than Washington's?
That's actually a good question. I think the Patriots.
You had some C minuses
only
in there. I didn't see a D anywhere. So I think you had Washington essentially at the bottom of the off season list.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I think C minus was as low as I went. So I think the Patriots are definitely one of the other teams that fit into that category.
Yeah. We're talking to Sam Monson here on the show at PFF underscore Sam. I want to go back to the division and really more or less talk about next year versus the offseason. And, you know, you can get Sam's, you know, by becoming a customer of PFF, the rankings of the 32 teams and their offseason grades. So you said something when you were talking about Philadelphia. You said, you know, about A.J. Brown and the acquisition of A.J. Brown, you know, wherever you want to put him, somewhere in the top five. You believe A.J. Brown's a top five NFL wide receiver?
Yeah, with the caveat that I think there's probably more than five top five wide receivers, if that right. makes sense. I think there's a group of guys that are probably, you know, seven or eight strong that in any given season fit into that top five category. And I think A.J. Brown has shown consistently that he has that kind of ability. He's got that sort of production. Health is maybe a little bit of a question mark for him. He's missed some time. But when he's out there, his production, his yards per route run, his just physical dominance over defensive backs, I think, puts him into that kind of category.
I tend to agree with you, and the reason I asked you is we had this conversation recently because, you know, a lot of the fans of Washington around here really believe that Terry McLaurin should be, you know, kind of discussed at that same level. I think Terry McLaurin's a really good number one wide receiver. I don't think he is in that class. What do you think about Terry McLaurin?
I think you can make the argument that he belongs in the same category. And I think it wouldn't be a bad argument to make. We saw right away his rookie season, he was fantastic. He was absolutely as good as A.J. Brown. Problem is, since then, you know, A.J. Brown has had a functional offense. He's had Ryan Tannehill. He's had Derrick Henry. He's had a bunch of things around it that have enabled him to continue and to sort of dominate as that number one guy and keep on going. Terry McLaurin has not had the benefit of the team doing a great job of building around him. So it's still pretty much just Terry McLaurin. And I think the longer that is the case, the better NFL teams are at combating one guy, you know? So I think it's entirely possible that Terry McLaurin is as good as A.J. Brown in abstract terms. He's obviously, I don't think, quite as special an athlete as A.J. Brown. Like, he's just smaller. He's not as physically dominant as a guy like A.J. Brown. But we've seen that he can play at that kind of level. And I think if Washington put a team around him that meant you couldn't focus as much on Terry McLaurin, you might see him definitely get elevated into that category again.
So that leads me to this. They are certainly going to negotiate a contract extension for McLaurin between now and training camp. You know, it was just before training camp last year that they got John Allen signed to a long-term deal. McLaurin is not a first-round guy, does not have a fifth-year option, so this is his last year of his four-year rookie deal. They're certainly going to try to extend him. Do you think he will get what I think he's probably looking for, which is, you know, an AAV in the top five, somewhere, you know, north of $24 million per year? Do you think he deserves that or not?
Oh, I think he definitely deserves that. I think Washington is a team that can afford to do that. You know, one of the reasons Philadelphia was able to get a guy like A.J. Brown is because you look at the rest of that receiving core, they're not earning much money. You know, they weren't already committed to an absolute ton of cash in the receiving core because they were all young guys. They were all on those rookie contracts, and some of them haven't panned out that well. Washington is similar, with the obvious exception of Curtis Samuel, who they brought in free agency. But outside of that, like, this is not a very expensive receiving core, and you could dedicate a ton of money to Terry McLaurin and still be fine. You know, we've seen teams like the Chargers are dedicating $20 million to two different receivers. In today's NFL, you know, you can do that. So Washington have already got a chunk of cash dedicated to Curtis Samuel. I think there's still more than enough there in terms of spend in the wide receiver room to give Terry McLaurin that kind of A.J. Brown-type money.
All right. We had you on, I think, after the Carson Wentz trade, and you said the same things then that you've said now, that you weren't very impressed with it and you didn't think it was a very good deal. I think a lot of those things have been echoed from this show as well. With that said, he is an upgrade over what they've had. He's the best they've had in terms of upside potential since Kirk was here, and that's now, you know, going on 5 years. What do you think of Washington's chances to be a better football team next year than they were last? Putting aside their offseason grade, you know, and the way you feel about the Wentz trade, what are you expecting? What is PFF expecting from Washington in 2022?
I think they can potentially be a better team than a year ago because for a couple of reasons. One, I don't think the defense is going to be as bad as it was last season. I think they didn't just catch, you know, the obvious flip side to the season before that. I think they went hard in the other direction. You know, we saw a defense that was playing worse than it should have played last year, even adjusting for facing better quarterbacks and all those kinds of things. So I think the defense probably plays better this year, and immediately you're in a better situation because of that. And I agree, as much as Carson Wentz, you know, the prospects don't look great, he should be a significant upgrade over Taylor Heineke, just the way we would have expected Ryan Fitzpatrick to be a significant upgrade last year over Taylor Heineke. So getting that much of an upgrade at quarterback should be a boost. But we're dealing with a division where Dallas should still be very good, where the Eagles had one of the best off seasons in the NFL, where I think the Giants made steps in the right direction. So I think Washington will be better than a year ago, but now they have to combat pretty much everybody else being better as well and seeing where that shakes out overall.
All right, three more quick questions for you, and I'll let you run. It's now, you know, the bulk of the offseason is over. The schedule's out. So we all start to look forward to, you know, the big games and week one and start making predictions, and we'll be doing these segments from now until opening day. So number one is this. Who's your Super Bowl winner right now in 2022? Who's the team that you have this gut feel is going to surprise in a much bigger way than anybody's anticipating?
I think my Super Bowl winner, when we did this predictions on the PFF NFL Daily, I think I went for Cleveland. I think the Browns
Super Bowl
were
winner,
supposed
Cleveland
to be.
With Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, and that is assuming Watson plays all season, or at least, you know, the majority of him is playing at the important time at the end of the season. The Browns were supposed to be a Super Bowl contender a year ago, yep. And then right. Baker Mayfield hurt his shoulder. The longer he played, the worse he played, and the whole thing kind of unraveled. And even then, they were kind of in contention, you know, pretty late in the season. That's why he kept on playing until they were finally out of the picture and they shut him down. Deshaun Watson is an upgrade, or should be an upgrade, even over the best Baker Mayfield we have seen. So
of course,
the Browns, I think, should be an immediate contender with him back in the picture. And, you know, they've done a decent job adding guys like Amari Cooper. So I think quietly the Browns are actually immediately one of the Super Bowl contenders. It's the same thing when we were expecting them to contend a year ago. You never quite believe it because it's Cleveland, right? So until we see it, nobody's going
to
buy into it.
And we don't know how many games Deshaun Watson's going to be eligible to play in, too. That'll be a factor.
Yeah, when I made that prediction, it sounded like they were going to kind of shelve whatever NFL investigation until, or at least match the legal process. So he was probably going to play all of 2022, and then the suspension, if one comes, will be handed down the next year. Now it sounds like that might actually be accelerated, and the NFL could hand down whatever disciplinary proceedings they're going to go with this year, and that, if that happens, potentially blows the whole thing out of the water. But I think the Browns are definitely a contender.
Well, I mean, you may have answered both of those questions with the same team. Unless you've got another team that really, from the back of the pack, you think has a chance to surprise.
Yeah, maybe not in terms of like winning playoff games or being a contender or anything, but I think the Detroit Lions could end up being pretty good this year. And that's not the strongest division in the world. So, you know, Detroit were, 3-13-1 last season. I could easily see Detroit overachieving this year and winning, you know, threatening 500 and actually looking like they're headed places.
All right, I got 5 seconds just to settle an argument between me and my middle son. If you could only pay one for the next, 6 years, who would you pay, Ja'Marr Chase or Justin Jefferson?
Oh, Chase. He was the better guy at college. He's still the better guy, I think.
Sam, thanks. I always enjoy our conversations. Appreciate it. Hope you're well. We'll talk soon.
Anytime. Take it easy.
Yep, at PFF underscore Sam. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980, Team980.com. We're also on the Odyssey app.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.